So we gather for hope in the church. But my brothers and sisters, here is the difficulty. We have contradictory hopes. So how can we hope together?
Synod Spirituality, a special edition of Vatican Viewpoint, a podcast produced by Vatican Radio. I'm your host, Devin Watkins. The Church is journeying toward the second session of the 16th Ordinary General Assembly of the Synod, which takes place in the Vatican in October 2024. To help Catholics prepare, we're spending a few weeks exploring the spirituality of synodality. We're returning to the reflections that Dominican Father Timothy Radcliffe offered to Synod participants in October 2023. In this first episode, let's listen to the meditation offered by the former master of the Order of Preachers at last year's pre-synod retreat, entitled Hoping Against Hope.
To guide us on this retreat, we shall take the Transfiguration. This is the retreat that Jesus gives to his closest disciples before they embark on the first synod in the life of the church, when they walk together, sin hodos, to Jerusalem. This retreat on the mountain was needed because they were afraid of the journey they must make together. Until now, they've wandered around the north of Israel, but at Caesarea Philippi, Peter confessed that Jesus was the Christ. Then Jesus invites them to go to Jerusalem, where he will suffer, die, and be raised from the dead. They cannot accept this. Peter tries to prevent him. Jesus calls him Satan, enemy. The little community is paralyzed. So Jesus takes them up the mountain for their retreat. Let's just listen to St. Mark's account of what happened. 6 days later, Jesus took with him Peter and James and John and led them up a high mountain apart by themselves, and he was transfigured before them. His clothes became dazzling white, such as no one on earth could bleach them. And there appeared to them Elijah with Moses, who were talking with Jesus. Then Peter said to Jesus, "Rabbi, it is good for us to be here. Let us make three dwellings, one for you, one for Moses, one for Elijah." He did not know what to say, for they were terrified. Then a cloud overshadowed them, and from the cloud there came a voice, "This is my son, the beloved. Listen to him." Suddenly they looked around. They saw no one with them anymore, but only Jesus. This retreat gives them the courage and the hope to set out on their journey. It does not all go well. Immediately they fail to free the young lad from the evil spirit. They quarrel about who is the greatest. They misunderstand the Lord, but they're on their way with a fragile hope. So we prepare for our synod by going on retreat, where, like the disciples on the mountain, we listen to the Lord. When we set off in 3 days' time, we shall often be like those disciples and misunderstand each other and even quarrel. But the Lord will lead us onwards towards the death and resurrection of the church. Let us ask the Lord to give us hope too. Hope that this synod will lead to a renewal of the church and not division. Hope that we may draw closer to each other as brothers and sisters. And this is not just our hope for the Catholic Church, but for all our baptized brothers and sisters. People talk of an ecumenical winter. We hope for an ecumenical spring. We also gather in hope for humanity. The future looks grim. Ecological catastrophe threatens the destruction of our home. Wildfires and floods have devoured the world this summer. Small islands are beginning to disappear under the sea. Millions of people are on the road, fleeing from poverty and violence. Hundreds have drowned in the Mediterranean, not far from here. Many parents refuse to bring children into a world that appears to be doomed. In China, young people wear T-shirts saying, "We are the last generation." So let us gather in hope. Hope for humanity, especially hope for the young. So we gather for hope in the church and for humanity. But my brothers and sisters, here is the difficulty. We have contradictory hopes. So how can we hope together? In this, we are just like the disciples. The mother of James and John hoped that they would sit on the left and right of the Lord in his glory and so displace Jesus, a Peter. There was rivalry even within the closest circle of Jesus' friends. Judas hoped, probably, for a rebellion that would overthrow the Romans. Some of the disciples just hoped not to get killed, but they walked together. So what shared hope can we have at this synod? At the Last Supper, they received a hope beyond all they could have imagined. The body and blood of Christ, the new covenant, eternal life. In the light of this Eucharistic hope, all their conflicting hopes must have seemed as nothing, except unto Judas, who despaired. This is what St. Paul calls hoping against hope, the hope that transcends all our hopes. Our hope is Eucharistic. I first glimpsed this in Rwanda in 1993, when the troubles were just beginning. We'd planned to visit our Dominican sisters in the north of Rwanda, but the Belgium ambassador said, "Don't go. Don't leave the house today. The country is on fire." But I was young and foolish. Now I'm old and foolish. That day we saw terrible things. A hospital ward filled with young children who'd lost limbs through mines and bombs. One child who'd lost two legs, an arm and an eye. His father sat beside him weeping. I went out into the bush weeping, accompanied by two children, each hopping on one leg. We went to our sisters, but what could be said? In the face of such meaningless violence, one has no words. Then I remembered the words of the Lord, "Do this in memory of me." We were given something to do. At the Last Supper, there seemed to be no future. All that lay ahead was failure, the disintegration of community, suffering, death. And in this darkest, bleakest moment, Jesus made the most hopeful gesture in the history of humanity, of the world. "This is my body given for you. This is my blood poured out for you." This is the hope that calls us beyond all division. When one of my Dominican brothers in the east of Ukraine went to mass for some sisters who were moving, everything was packed. All they could offer for the pattern was a red plastic plate. He wrote, "This is how God showed he was with us. God said, 'You're sitting in the basement, in the damp and in the mold, but I am with you on a red child's plate, not on a golden platter.'" This is the Eucharistic hope of the Synod. The Lord is with us. The hope of the Eucharist is for what lies beyond our imagination. The book of Revelation Behold an immense multitude which no one could count, from every nation, tribe, people and language. They stood all before the throne and before the Lamb, wrapped in white robes, and held palm branches in their hands. And they cried with a loud voice, "Salvation belongs to our God, who is seated on the throne, and to the Lamb." That's the hope that the disciples glimpsed on the mountain in the transfigured Lord. It makes the conflict between our hopes seem minor, almost absurd. If we are truly on the way to the kingdom of heaven, does it really matter whether you primarily align yourself with so-called traditionalists or progressives? Even the differences between Dominicans and Jesuits pall into insignificance. So let us listen to him. Come down the mountain and keep on walking confidently. The greatest gifts will come from those with whom we disagree, if we dare to listen to them. During our synodal journey, we may probably worry whether we're achieving anything. The media will probably decide that it's all a waste of time, just words. They will look to see whether bold decisions are made on 4 or 5 hot button topics. Remember, the disciples on that first synod walking to Jerusalem did not appear to achieve anything. They even tried to stop blind Bartimaeus from being cured. They looked useless. But when the vast crowd gathers around Jesus and the disciples ask the Lord, "How can we feed these people with bread here in the desert?" Jesus asks them for what they have. Just 7 loaves and a few fish. That's more than enough. If we give generously whatever we have in this synod, it will be more than enough. The Lord of the harvest will provide. Next to our priory in Baghdad is a home for abandoned children of all faiths, run by Mother Teresa's sisters. I will never forget little Noura, 8 years old, born without arms or legs, feeding the youngest children with a spoon in her mouth. One can wonder, what's the point of small acts of goodness in a war zone? Do they make any difference? Aren't they just sticking plasters on a rotting body? But if we do the small good acts and let the Lord of the harvest give them the fruit he wishes, that will be enough. Today we gather on the feast of St. Thérèse of Lisieux. She was born 150 years ago today. She invites us to follow her little way that leads to the kingdom. Thérèse said, "Remember that nothing is small in the eyes of God." In Auschwitz, Primo Levi, Italian Jew, was given a little bit of bread every day by Lorenzo. He wrote, "I believe it's really due to Lorenzo that I am alive today, and not so much for his material aid, but as he's constantly reminded me by his presence, by his natural, plain way of being good, that there exists a world outside my own, something and somewhere still pure and whole, not corrupt, not savage, something difficult to define, a remote possibility of good, for which it is worth surviving. Thanks to Lorenzo, I managed not to forget I am a man. A small portion of bread saved his soul. The last words of St. David, the patron saint of Wales, were, "Do simple things well." Our hope that whatever simple deeds we do in this synod will bear fruit beyond our imagination. On that last night, Jesus gave himself to the disciples. I give myself to you. A final point. Peter tries to stop Jesus going to Jerusalem because it makes no sense to him. It's absurd to go there to get killed. Despair is not pessimism. It's the terror that nothing makes sense any longer. Hope is not optimism. It's the confidence that all we live, all our confusion, our pain, will somehow be seen to have meaning. Thus we trust, as St. Paul said, "For now I know in part, but then I shall understand, even as I have been understood." Senseless violence destroys all meaning and kills our souls. When St. Oscar Romero, the Archbishop of San Salvador, visited the scene of a massacre by the Salvadorian army, he came across the body of a young boy lying in a ditch. I quote, "He was just a kid at the bottom of the ditch, face up. You could see the bullet holes and the bruises left by the blows, the dried blood. His eyes were open, as if asking the reason for his death." But it was at this moment that St. Oscar Romero discovered the meaning of his life and the call to give it up. Yes, he was fearful to the end. His body was soaked in sweat as he looked at the man who was about to kill him. But he was no longer the slave of fear. I hope in this synod there will be no violence. But often we shall probably wonder, what is the point of it all? But if we listen to him and to each other, we shall come to understand the way forward. This is our Christian witness in a world which is losing confidence that human existence has any meaning, to seek understanding. Shakespeare's Macbeth asserts, "Life is but a tale told by an idiot, full of sound and fury, signifying nothing." But through our thinking and praying and listening together about the great issues that the church and the world faces, we've witnessed to our hope in the Lord who grants meaning to every human life. Every Christian school is a testimony to our hope in the light that shines in the darkness, and the darkness did not overcome it. In Baghdad, the Dominicans founded an academy which has the motto, "Here no questions are forbidden." In the middle of a war zone, a school testifies to our hope that the nonsense of violence will not have the last word. Homs in Syria, a city almost entirely destroyed by mad violence. But there in the midst, we found a small school, Catholic school. It was here that the Dutch Jesuit, Frans van der Lucht, refused to leave despite threats of violence. He was sitting in the garden and they came in and they shot him. But we found in a classroom an old Egyptian Jesuit teaching. That's what hope looks like. Training another generation of children to go on trying to understand the meaning of their lives. So, my brothers and sisters, we may be divided by different hopes, but if we listen to the Lord and to each other, seeking to understand His will for the church and the world, we shall be united in a hope that transcends all our disagreements and be touched by the one whom St. Augustine called that beauty so ancient and so new. I tasted you and now hunger and thirst for you. You touched me and I have burnt for your peace.
Synod Spirituality, this episode of Vatican Viewpoint O's special thanks to Stephanie Bross. We'll be back again next week.